I do want you all to know that I didn't forget Mother's Day. And my wife is so easy to make happy when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, I had all these plans. I was going to get her. She loves orchids. So, you know, the Phalaenopsis orchids you find in a lot of the stores and stuff like that. I was going to get her one of those, going to get a card, you know, throw some cash in the card and all that kind of stuff, just make her real happy. You know what she wanted for Mother's Day? A Spanish Bible. And so we were in Hackman's yesterday, and she found one in the translation she wanted, and so she's all happy. Oh, I'm so excited about a Spanish Bible. And said, my goodness, thank you, Lord, for a wife that's that easy to please. And she must be easy to please because she married me. What's that? You see right there? That's it. Okay, you're dismissed. Some people say that bad things happen in trees. You ever hear that? You know, if there's a tornado in Texas, then there's going to be something bad in Tallahassee. And then, you know, Toledo's going to have another problem, some other natural disaster or something like that, because bad things always happen in trees. How many of you really believe that? Okay, you wouldn't dare raise your hand, would you? Because you're in a church and all that kind of stuff. Optimists say something else. Optimists say good things happen in trees. You know? So the pessimists say bad stuff happens in trees. The optimists say good things happen in trees. I happen to believe that good things happen in trees, like, you know, chocolate, you know, and strawberry. If you know what I'm talking about. Good sermon has 3 points to it. You know, point one, point two, point three, goodbye. At least that's what we learned in my homiletics classes in Bible school. Kevin Robinson and all that kind of stuff. And I know that the idea of this whole thing is kind of whimsical, but the Apostle Paul talks about some good things that happen in threes. And if you want to turn, please, to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. What's that? Oh, that's why I have three cats. Yes. Abel, Julia, and Paul. Actually, those are the three bad things that happen in threes. I was cleaning out their cat box the other day, and I threw my back out, and so I'm hating my cats right now. So that's why I'm not liking my cats. Paul talks about good things that happen in threes. Okay? And if you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 13, what does Paul say? These three things remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians has been called the love chapter because it talks about all the things that love is, and it talks about some things that love isn't. Let's read it very quickly, okay? I'm going to speed read this for you and do the best you can to follow along. Not really speed reading, but it says, "And yet I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love." Some years ago, I attended Corning Community College. It was a small community college in upstate New York, western upstate. And we used to have these things on a regular basis, about, you know, one time a week over the course of the warmer months. We would have these things called brown bag forums. Okay? What those things were was they would bring in these well-known scholars and they would come and do little forums. And they would just sit there and talk with you. And as you ate your lunch out of the brown bag that you brought your lunch in, you could talk with them and ask them some questions. I got to have a conversation with a man by the name of Buckminster Fuller. Now, have you ever heard of Buckminster Fuller? Okay? Doesn't he sound brilliant? I mean, a name like Buckminster Fuller, he's got to be smart. Actually, he is. Or was. Did he just die recently? I don't really know. But one of the things that he talked about was his design for a house. He designed a house that can withstand, if done correctly, the finger of God tornadoes. That's the F5, if it's done properly, he said. And it's a house that is made of something called a geodesic dome. Now, how many of you are saying, oh, yeah, I know what that is. That's simple. Not so simple. It's a house with a semicircular roof, and the roof is made up of triangles. Triangles set against each other. And because he believed, and he said, and he's very sure of this, that the strongest and most rigid geometric form is the equilateral triangle. If you have a square, can I make a square? If you push against one of the sides, the square will lean. Same thing for any other four-sided object. Even the sphere isn't as strong as a geodesic dome that's made up of triangles. The geodesic dome made up of triangles is the hardest, strongest structure you can build a house out of. And there are actually houses somewhere around the area here that are built with that. I've seen them. Okay? That's because they're supposed to be very storm-worthy. The thing about the equilateral triangle is if you push on one side, it actually puts pressure on two sides and makes them stronger. So any side you push on is going to create a strong structure. And this is kind of the picture I get when I read this thing that Paul is saying about love. I get the idea of an equilateral triangle because if you have faith, it can only be made strong if you have hope and love. And if you've got love, that can only be strong if you've got hope and faith. Get it? So that's actually an equilateral triangle, which is the name of the message this morning. So if you can just forgive me, please, for my whimsy this morning about the number three and about triangles and all of that. And I got to get off this whole idea of triangles before some of you make me try to come up with this formula about the square of the hippopotamus is equal to the direct correlation of the circumference of the third side or whatever that law is called. And I intend to show you what the Bible teaches. If we expect to have the love that the Lord wants us to have, okay, then we've got to have three things. Now, it would be really easy to come and just preach on, you know, Mother's Day. You know, talk about Hannah and Samuel, which is a sermon you hear every year on Mother's Day. But you know I don't like doing that kind of stuff. You know, Palm Sunday, I preach about something totally non-Palm Sunday. Same thing for today. Mother's Day, I want to talk to you about the stuff that will make you strong. Okay? As a positive female role model or as a mom, you just apply it however you want to apply it. The Bible says that we can have stable marriages and have stable homes. Yeah, it says we can have all that. We can have productive relationships. We can be a productive individual for Christ. But if we want any of that, we've got to have three things. Okay? What are they? That's assuming you have Jesus first. You have Christ first. If you want to have a stable and strong relationship or a stable and strong home, you've got to have faith, hope, and love. And Paul says that faith abides first. Those who says that, verse 13, these three remain. Faith, hope, and love. The first one is faith. Now, what does it mean to have faith? Well, if you want a quick definition for it, I will just tell you this. Faith means having a trusting and believing heart. trusting and believing. You've got to be trusting and you've got to be believing if you want to have faith. If you want to have faith in a person to abide, meaning to live with you, if you want to have that kind of faith, then I have to assume that the other people around me will always deal with me at a level of truth. Okay? If I have faith in a person, I've got to believe that they are going to be looking out for my best interest, and they're always going to be dealing with me in a level of truth. Does that make sense? If somebody around you isn't dealing with you from that base of truth and wanting your best interest, are they good to have faith in? No. No. But if I have faith in somebody, it means I'm totally committed to their success. Ladies and gentlemen, I will tell you, number one, if you want to have a stable and normal relationship with somebody else and have it to be constructive and a blessing to you, then you must be what? You must be concerned about their success. Everybody goes through challenges. Everybody faces challenges. I don't know anybody, even in this congregation, I don't know the single person whose heart is totally and purely untroubled. Everybody's got problems. We all do. But if I have faith in somebody, it means that even when he or she disappoints me, I will believe that that disappointment was just a momentary lapse or a mistake, and that overall the person is still worthy of my trust. I want to believe that when I look at my wife, she does not have any reason to believe that she's not the only woman in my life. She must be able to look at me and trust me. Does that make sense? Same way. I must be able to look at her and totally trust her. Believe that she is concerned about my well-being and that she would not try to deliberately hurt me. That means I have faith in another person. But did you know that having faith in God takes it to a different level? Do you honestly believe in a God that you can trust? Real easy to bob the heads like this and say, oh yeah, I really believe in a God I can trust because, well, if I go like this, a whole bunch of people are going to see me and they're going to think something's wrong. And we don't do that kind of thing in church. Right? We don't ever let anybody know there's something wrong. Everything's always got to be rosy. But what if I was to tell you that there is a God you can trust? You should never be afraid of being committed to Him. You know why? Because He's committed to you. Somebody here needs to hear that. God is committed to you. If I was to consider all the counseling appointments I hold in the course of a year, would you be surprised if I was to tell you that over half of them in dealing with couples occurs because there's been a fracture in the trust in the marriage? Something has happened that has shaken one person's trust in the other. Well over half. People should trust us. People should be able to trust us. People should be able to have faith in us. Why? Because we're so normally faithful? No. Because we worship a faithful God. And we need to show people that we worship a faithful God. Do you believe in a God that you can trust? I had a really hard time with that growing up. Total moment of transparency here. My dad split when I was 2 years old. And one of the reasons why he split when I was 2 years old was because he had a reputation as being a, as my mom called it, a skirt chaser. What's that? Somebody with an eye for the ladies. And I grew up not trusting him. Did you know that as I got older, that distrust in him shaped my ideas about God? And I viewed him as a God who couldn't be trusted either. After all, Revelation chapter 13, which is scary stuff. But you can trust God. I don't don't care what your mom and dad were like. You can trust God. You can trust Him. Okay? You can have faith in Him. Because He is always looking out for your best interests. And because He is always looking out for your best interests, your job, my job, is to show the world a God that they can have faith in. What do you think would happen in every home, every household represented here in this body, and maybe even in the entire town, if all the husbands and all the wives became men and women that their spouses could trust completely? What would happen? When you no longer trust somebody, the relationship is in big trouble. I want you to know that your relationship with God, if it's in trouble, maybe because you don't trust Him. Trust God. Amen? Trust Him. Side one of the equilateral triangle is the side of faith. Or some of your translations will say trust. We have to trust Him, first and foremost. But faith cannot abide if there is no hope. What is hope? Well, hope means having goals. Hope means having visions for your future. Okay? Hope is having dreams and it's having directions. Hope for a Christian means knowing that your life is counting for something out there in God's plan. God has a plan. He has a plan for you, and you can believe it. Okay? One of our candidates running for president is running on a platform of what? A future you can believe in? Or something like that? There's not a candidate on planet Earth that can give me a future that I can believe in. There's only one that can do that. You know who that is? Hope means you started back here somewhere, okay? You may have started back here, but you're headed towards something better over here, and you believe that the Lord is directing you along that path. Do you believe that to be true? Now, if you don't have any hope, what'll happen? What if you don't have that sense of hope? Well, if you're in a family or in a relationship with anybody in which there isn't any sense of hope, what's going to happen? It's going to implode. It's going to blow up. But not blow up, it'll blow in. How many of you ever watched a building that they want to demolish, and so they set off these explosive charges in the building designed for the purpose of making the building collapse in on itself? That's what happens in relationships and homes when there is no sense of hope. They fold like a house of cards. It will fall in on itself. Caring for each other will collapse because there's no sense of hope. All you do is look at each other's faces and see despair. Who needs to see that on a daily basis? Nobody. What happens in a home when you have no hope in the home? All you do is tend to each other's irrational needs 24 hours a day. You shut the world out. And what happens in homes like that? Boom. They collapse in. No matter how committed you are to each other, you need to be able to go beyond the just us two mindset. How many of you have ever hung around with newlyweds? You ever hung around with a newlywed couple? There's some people in the church here that are still kind of newlyweds. Okay? Little Faye and Jim over there. I love to watch people like that because they're still young enough in their marriage where the honeymoon is still kind of going on. The bloom is still on the rose, if you know what I'm talking about. Newlyweds can shut out the rest of the world. They're there for each other, and who needs anything but love? Isn't love grand? Isn't it wonderful? Oh, yeah. They have stars in their eyes. Every time they look at each other, their heart flutters. They call each other these cute little pet names. And if they're apart from each other, they call each other, you know, on the hour, every hour. Hey, you know, I just want you to get to know that I love you. Oh, isn't that wonderful? You can't see what I see here, but I'm looking at Dana. She's all red in the face. Richard's got a smile way over here somewhere. Ah. After all these years of marriage, all these years, we can still kind of remember what that was like way back then, and the need to shut out the world sometimes. But you know, if you should call my house, I will almost always get the phone. Almost always. But when it's dinner time, I'm not answering the phone. Do you know why? Because that one percentage point of the time, what does there need to be? There needs to be her and me time. Okay, she's my only permanent congregation. You guys are mad at me and probably shoot me someday. She can't do that because she'll be in the paper. Now, if you should have an emergency and you need me very badly, yeah, I'll interrupt dinner for that. But there needs to be that time, folks. Okay? A couple times. It's important. Let me ask you this question. What if you're in a relationship and the dreaming stops? What if you're in a relationship and the hope ends? Couples that come to me for counseling, they'll say, oh, we got this problem, that problem. They'll say, oh, I can't stand him. Oh, I can't stand her. Blah, 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 blah. And I'll just sit there and nod my head. But in my head, I'm going, right? Oh, no. That's it. I'm done with this person. I'm going, oh, no, you're not. You just think you are. And I'll know that there's going to be a way through this, and I'm not going to have a problem helping them get through this unless they come to me and say, Pastor, we got a problem. We stopped dreaming. We don't have any hope for each other anymore. That's when I know that there's a huge problem. More often than not, when people come to me and talk about that, I'll do what I can to help them, and I refer them to a professional. I'm a pastoral counselor. I'm not a professional. There has to be the ability to dream, the ability to have goals, the ability to have hope in each other. And if there are none of these, there has to be at least the understanding that God is in the middle of the home and that they can together hope in God. And if they don't have that, it's in trouble. If you can look at your mate and say, you know, their taste in music is different, their taste in entertainment is different, you know, their taste in colors is different, their taste in all this stuff is different, but you have the single thing, Jesus Christ, as the thing you have in common, you have all things in common. And everything else is incidental. I don't care if my wife hates the Yankees. If we have Jesus number one in the home. Amen? And she does hate the Yankees. We have a mixed marriage. Faith has to be blended in hope. You've got to have faith and you've got to have hope if you want to have any hope at all. That's why I tell people, if you want to have a relationship with somebody that's going to be worth something, find somebody that's on the same footing you are spiritually. If you don't have that, you've got nothing. Got nothing. Faith has to be blended with hope. Trust has to be put together with purpose. You understand where I'm coming from here? Two sides of the triangle. The strongest families I have seen are those who may not have everything in common as far as personal taste, but they've got Jesus Christ in common. And if you have Christ where He belongs in your home, you can get through anything. Anything. Wait a minute. But what if this happens? I don't care. If you've got Christ in the middle of things, it's going to be okay. But you've got to have Jesus first. That's why when I see people that don't have Christ in their relationship, I know there's not much hope. One of my friends from some years ago, when he retired, worked for actually Ma Bell. And if you remember Ma Bell, okay, it became, how many names has Ma Bell taken? The telephone company. He worked for them for over 30 years. And he was a lineman for over 30 years. He made a pretty good living hanging from those telephone poles. I'll never in my life understand how they can do that. But that's what he did for over 30 years. He saved up the money that he needed. Everything was looking good for his retirement. He retired. They threw him a nice party, gave him the watch, the whole thing. You know what I mean? He had the retirement. And then he came home. All of you ladies in there start going like this, uh-oh, what does this mean? Well, I'll tell you what it means. For a couple weeks, he tended the gardens. He manicured the lawn, pruned the trees, took care of all the household, you know, honeydew list items, you know, honeydew this, honeydew that, took care of all that, made sure all the plumbing was great, you know, everything was great in the house, no maintenance issues, and then he ran out of things to do. And he began spending his days in the house, and his wife would be cooking something on the stove, and he'd be going, oh, what you making? Why are you doing it that way? Why don't you do it this way? When my mom did this, she did it like this. When my mom did it, she did it like that. And this went on for a few weeks before his wife said, honey, some of you have heard this story before, but I'm going to tell it to those who don't. I married you for better and for worse, but not for 24/7. Either you get a hobby or I'm going to kill you. So he got himself a hobby, and she didn't have to kill him. But he began having achy knees. So he went to the doctors, and the doctors put him through CAT scans and MRIs and found out his knees were fine. And he began having what he thought was heart palpitations, and so he went to the doctors, and they put him through all kinds of tests. He had a heart catheterization because he believed he was going to have a heart attack, and his heart was fine. No blockages anywhere. Even at 70 years old, no problems. He developed carpal tunnel in both of his hands, and he had surgery for carpal tunnel done on both of his hands. After all of the MRIs, all the scans, all the tests, all the things he had done, he was given a clean bill of health. Okay? Why did he start having all these physical problems just months after he retired? He lost hope, folks. There's nothing for me to do. What can I do? What can I do? He put all of his energies that were once given to doing stuff into worrying about me. And he began to worry about himself. He lost hope. How important is hope? Folks, without hope, we're in trouble. Must have hope. Never lose hope. Faith abides. But so does hope. And these are two very strong sides of that equilateral triangle that I'm talking to you about this morning. But you know what the other side is, yes? Faith and hope finally need love. Faith and hope may abide. They may be strong. Faith and hope might be really good. But in order for them to be all they can be, you got to have something else. What is it? It's love. The greatest of these is love. The threesome must be balanced by, founded on, completed in this third thing, which is love. The triplets are rooted and grounded in love. The most powerful side of the equilateral triangle is love. If you honestly love somebody the way the Lord wants you to love them, your love will not fail them. He even says it right there. Love never fails. You see, love is tough. Love is not the warm and fuzzy feeling that they present to you in Hollywood. It's not a Hollywood kind of thing that you enjoy while you've got it, and if it disappears, then you ditch that one and you move on to somebody else. Love is not a warm, fuzzy feeling. It is a tough and enduring thing. You know why? Because real love comes from God. And did you know that God is a tough and enduring thing? Love that comes from His heart reflects the nature of God. And if we love the way that He wants us to love, our love will reflect His nature as well. It'll be selfless. Okay? It will not be selfish. and it will be enduring. It is not a warm glow in the gut. Folks, if you've got a warm glow in your gut, it's probably heartburn. It's not what we're talking about. If you've got the heartburn, just let us know. I think there's a thing of Tums around here somewhere. We don't need Tums. We need Jesus. Love is more than gracious gestures. It's more than just good table manners. Yes, we buy presents for our loved ones on their birthdays and on their special days like Mother's Day. But love isn't even that. They're gestures. But love is more than just gestures. It is something that is selfless, it is tough, and it does not quit. And I'll tell you something. I've had people come to me in the office and they'll say, I don't want to be married to the schmo anymore. Why not? Well, because I don't love them anymore. And I want a divorce. If they come to me angry, I just want to get rid of this person, they drive me nuts. I know there's hope if they come to me like that. It's the ones that come in front of me and sit down and go, Pastor Jay, I just can't stand this person anymore. I don't care. That's when I know there's trouble. Because when we lose that, that's trouble. I want you to know something, folks. And you can take this to the bank. Look at the person in your relationship that you love the most, be it your husband or your wife. Every relationship goes like this. There's times when you go apart and grow together, grow apart and go together, grow apart and go together. That is a normal cycle in every relationship, whether it's a friendship or a loveship with your mate. But there's one thing that must stand, and it must be the thing that your relationship is founded in. What is it? Commitment. If you are committed to each other, you're going to weather the storms. You're growing together, they're growing apart, they're growing together, they're growing apart. Your commitment will stick tight. But you must be committed. And oftentimes I'll tell people that. You haven't fallen out of love, you egghead. You've fallen out of commitment. You have lost your level of commitment. And that must be the thing. That's the guts and the glue that holds the whole thing together. And the commitment comes from Christ-like love. If you love somebody with Christ-like love, you're going to stay committed to them. I would like my wife to believe that I am the most brilliant man on planet Earth. I remind her on a regular basis that I'm very smart. Okay? And I have to remind her that because there's not a whole lot of empirical evidence to prove the point. But even if I do, what she will say is, well, you may be smart, but you don't have a whole lot of sense. And because of my past, I fear sometimes that she's going to give up on me and she's going to quit. But you know something? A committed heart doesn't quit. I have never felt more loved than the time that she's looked at me and said, I'm committed to you no matter what. It doesn't matter. I would rather hear that than, oh, you've got, you know, this and that, and I just love you for it. What happens if the this and that goes away? What if my wife was to say, I love you because you're the handsomest guy on earth? Number one, I know she's lying. But number two, what would happen if the, you know, if that went away? My wife should know that I think she's the most beautiful woman on earth. But what if that goes away? What if it goes away? Am I going to continue loving them? Love is really what happens when a wife understands that her husband is gravely ill, or when a husband discovers that his wife is gravely ill, and instead of getting bitter, they come alongside their spouse and they hold their hand and say, no matter what happens, I'm stuck to you like glue, white on rice. It's you and me. I don't care. This was made very, very plain to me some years ago. I told somebody this story this past week, so just bear with me while I tell it to everybody else. I knew a guy some years ago that married his high school sweetheart, and he loved her. She had the most beautiful smile. You know, he loved her because she had beautiful eyes, beautiful hair, beautiful smile. And they got married, and they were married for a good long time. Always loved her face. And then one day he came home from the office and found her laying prostrate on the floor. What does that mean? Face down on the floor, unable to move. He immediately called 911. They came and they put her on a gurney, and they immediately administered this thing that they use for people that have strokes. It's a stroke-busting medication that they're using these days. Because they diagnosed immediately, this woman looks like she's had a stroke. And she did. She had a massive, massive stroke. They took her to the hospital, and after a couple weeks in the hospital, she began to be able to move the fingers on one side of her body. And then the toes. But he came into her hospital room one day, and he looked at the face that he always loved, and it bore the marks of a massive stroke. One side of the face just limp and hanging. And as he talked to his wife, she began to cry. And he said, "Honey, what's the matter?" She said, "You always loved my smile. Look at my smile now." And she smiled with one side of her mouth. He looked at her and said, "Oh, don't sweat it, honey. I think it's kind of cute." And he bent his lips into the shape of hers. And he bent down and kissed her. And he said, "I promised you for better or for worse, in sickness and in health. And I meant it." I told you I love you, and I always will. You know what that is? It's the warm and fuzzy feeling that they sell you in Hollywood. No, it isn't. It's tough, strong, sinewy love. Love never ends. It keeps reaching. It keeps hoping. Whatever price has to be paid in order to keep the marriage and the family and the household together. Whatever price has to be paid to keep that friendship strong, be it between a husband and a wife and a husband, or between two very close friends. Love is the price you pay. And sometimes it has to be strong. Love is getting involved when you want to back off. It's staying committed when you don't really feel like it. Love is getting involved. Love is staying strong. Love is always redemptive. What better way to show people a God whose actions towards His creation is always redemptive, but to show the world redemptive love? Faith, hope, and love abide, these three. But the greatest of these is love. A short time ago, my wife and I buried a very dear friend of ours by the name of Dean Hegarty. Dean Hegarty was a pastor for many, many years, and he always closed every sermon the same way. You know how he'd end his sermons? He'd say, "Well, that's all I got to say about that. God bless you." So, folks, that's all I got to say about that. God bless you.